Hey, has lichen sclerosis messed with your relationships? You know, partner, family, friends, even at work? Then you need to join us at the Holistic Healing Summit this May 13th to the 17th, because we're bringing all the experts. We're going to be talking about intimacy, sex, as well as how do you talk to your family, friends, provider, boss? All of those things. And this is a free event, live, virtually, so you can catch it anywhere in the world, May 13th to the 17th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. We've got sessions going on all day. Get more information at lssupportnetwork.org/WHS. That's lssupportnetwork.org/WHS.
Hey, welcome. Thank you for coming to listen to the Lichen Sclerosis Podcast. My name is Kathy, and this is our journal of learning about and living with lichen sclerosis. Each week, I either research or speak to someone about an aspect of lichen sclerosis and bring you the information so you don't have to go searching. I bring you straight talk without the medical jargon. This week, we're going to talk to a phenomenal LS warrior who is not only been through an amazing transition in 2 short years, but is someone who is now giving back to the community. I'm so excited because over the last 4 months, this woman has become not just my LS sister, but my friend. And her story is one of perseverance and hope, resilience, acceptance. And I truly believe that her story is going to give you hope. There is better, that you can get there, that you can live that normal life that I've been telling you and preaching about, because you can. And you don't have to take my word for it. I'm going to let her tell you. Her story is so incredible that we had to break it into 2 parts. Jacqueline started this journey by herself. And this episode, you're going to listen to how it affected her and how she started building her team. Because I've said it before and I'll continue to say it, it takes a team for us to get better. Before we get into her story, I want to introduce our sponsor, Lichen Sclerosis Support Network. They're a group of content creators bringing information, education, and most importantly, support to people with LS all over the world. They are coming out with amazing things. One of their amazing projects is the Lichen Sclerosis Support Virtual Meetups. I'm honored to be the host, and every 2 weeks on Saturday, I meet with LS warriors from all over the world who come to share their stories, to ask questions, to just be around people who understand. If you feel like you're ready for that kind of support, that you are in that right headspace, please join us. Go to lssupport.net/connect. And there you can sign up for notifications, updates. The next meetup after this episode is going to be March the 6th. And we meet every other Saturday after that. So please sign up, join us. Cannot wait to meet you. And be sure to follow Lichen Sclerosis Support Network on Instagram and Facebook so you can stay up to date with all of the wonderful things that they're bringing out. And make sure that you listen all the way to the end, because I'm going to be making some announcements on some projects that they have coming out very, very shortly. And without further ado, let's just jump into my conversation with Jacqueline.
This information is for educational purposes and does not constitute medical advice. Speak to your medical provider before making any changes to your care.
When did you notice something was off? When did you notice that something's just not right and I need to get this checked out?
So I'm 33 years old right now, And I would say I started getting symptoms in my early 20s.
Okay.
My symptoms at the time were primarily, or if not exclusively, pain during sex and probably tearing during sex. And I think I didn't say tearing back in the day because it was just a language. It wasn't a word that I knew. I just knew it was painful.
Right.
And talking with my friends, no one ever seemed to mention sex being painful. No one seemed to describe what I was going through. So I kind of thought, all right, well, this is probably not normal. So I would occasionally mention it at the gynecologist's office. And like many people that you've had on the show, was given the whole, it's because you're built really small down there, or maybe the sex you're having is too rough. We don't see anything wrong. So, it was either that, or you just need to calm down. Oh, someone told me to drink wine. They were like, wine can help you relax. I think they thought that I was like too scared or something, yeah, or like too in my head. And they were like, wine can really help a lot of women relax before intercourse. And I was like,
did you tell him I'm a freak? What?
No. In my head.
You should have told him, listen, I got a swing in the corner. There's no... I'm just playing. I have no clue if she has a swing in her corner.
I'll let y'all guess. Suffice it to say, 20-year-old me would not have told that to the gynecologist. I was still really, I usually got kind of shamed in the gynecologist's office as a teenager. And so I think that led me to kind of close off with respect to what I would tell, because I did get a lot of shame when I was younger. So yeah. Painful sex was my earliest symptom, definitely.
Looking back now that you were tearing, was there blood?
Yeah, there was usually a little bit of blood when I would clean up afterwards. Again, I didn't know whether or not that was normal. I think deep down I knew it wasn't, but because it happened all the time, I guess I just kind of normalized it, especially when you're told multiple times that there's nothing wrong, then you just kind of think, well, okay, I'm the person that bleeds a little after sex, I guess. Right.
It was a decade of more than a decade to get a diagnosis.
Yeah.
In that time, you're having relationships. I mean, your main symptom was pain with sex.
Yeah.
So it couldn't have been enjoyable sex with pain. How did that go? How did you cope?
It was interesting. So I had a few partners, obviously, in this span of a decade, and it was always painful. I don't think I ever had a moment where the whole sex penetration part was pain-free. I think at best, it was a little uncomfortable at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So, as he's trying to enter, like, that part would be painful. Once he got in, it kind of got okay. That was my best case scenario. My worst case scenario was there was tearing and I just couldn't do it. I do work with a sex therapist, and I have ever since I was diagnosed. And what I told her when I first met her, and she hated that I likened myself, but I likened myself to a pair of new shoes that needed to be broken in.
Aww.
And that was her reaction. She almost cried. This was, pre-COVID, so I could see her. And she had tears in her eyes. And I said, well, this is how I feel. Because one thing I noted that was different between me and my friends was I had to be really mindful. I had to, there was a lot of thinking and preparing that came with sex that didn't seem to be the case with other people that were having sex. And so when I draw the shoe analogy, I would say, when you first get a new pair of shoes, you have to break them in. And during that period, it can be really painful. But eventually, you kind of get used to it, and then the pain subsides. And that's kind of how I felt. I felt like my vagina was a shoe that needed to be broken in. So when I was with a new partner, it would be incredibly painful. But if we had frequent sex, then I could get to a point where it was just a little uncomfortable, but not painful. But again, I had to be really mindful because frequent sex couldn't be every single day back to back.
Right.
Because I needed time to recover.
Right.
And I didn't know what I needed to recover at the time. I had no idea. I just knew that I needed some healing time.
Right.
So I had to be mindful about when. I couldn't do it every day, but I couldn't go too long because if I went over a week, it was like I had to be broken in again.
Right.
So there was a lot of thinking, a lot of preparedness, a lot of things that I just felt someone in their 20s shouldn't have to think this hard about and be so regimented about.
Right. So we know now through our conversations with Dr. Jill, which if you haven't seen that episode, you need to seriously go back and watch that whole episode. It is gold. But we know now that the reason that you tear and the reason that you continue to tear is because you have fusing at the opening of the vagina. And every time that you have sex, that friction, that pressure opens up that fused skin, and you may have some blood because you might tear to a point where you hit a blood vessel, but you might tear and you not have blood because there's no blood vessels going between that fused skin. But if you keep having sex, if you did it within the next 3-4 days, then you do it before you let that fused skin fuse again.
Right.
But if you wait too long, like the week or two, then that skin is going to fuse. And when you have LS and your skin starts fusing, it can fuse quickly.
Yes.
It does not take a long time for that skin to fuse. And if you are fusing over and over and over again, the doctors don't use the word fuse, as we found out in that episode. They use the word scarring. So if you scar that area over and over and over again, you got to think about it. Now you're building up tissue over tissue over tissue, and that area becomes really thick. And the more you cause trauma to that area by continuing to tear and fuse and tear and fuse and tear and fuse, it can become extremely painful. It can even become to the point where you can't tear that skin anymore. And now you just can't have sex because your opening is too small. So that's why it's super important that we use our steroid correctly, because if you tear and you put your steroid on top of that tear correctly, it's going to prevent the fusing from happening. So over time, the longer you use your steroid, the less chance you have of tearing, which means now you can have pain-free sex. So when was the first time that you heard the words lichen sclerosis?
When I was 31 years old, and my general physician, I was in her office complaining about headaches, and I tend to go all over the place with my train of thought, and was talking about my headaches, and somehow I just mentioned some of my symptoms. At this point, it had progressed, and I told her that I was just at a clinic downtown. I actually went to an STI clinic because I hadn't heard of lichen sclerosis. To me, it was either a yeast infection, a UTI, or you had an STI. There was no discharge showing yeast. There was no UTI. So in my head, I was like, there must be an STI. So I would frequent STI clinics. So I went to, I know. And so I went to a woman's STI / vulvar clinic downtown Toronto a week prior. And I told her my symptoms and she looked at me. And I also complained about being really dry. She looked at me and said, you're not that dry. I've seen way worse. And I was like, well, I wasn't asking for a comparison, but okay. I know people have it worse, like that. Okay, unhelpful. And then she said,
better.
Yeah. And then she said, it's either neurological or stress. In either event, I can't help you.
Wow.
So at this point, I had almost given up because it had been over a decade, but I was getting really worse at this point. Like my skin was sticky, like wax paper. And I knew something was wrong, but I went to a specialized clinic and I was told nothing. So I kind of gave up, but I guess I was feeling just so overwhelmed. And so when I was in my GP's office, that's general physician, because I'm in Canada, and I mentioned it, she kind of, you know, did the little dog side head thing and was like, wait, can you tell me your symptoms again? And I told her all the symptoms. And then she said, would you mind if I took a look at you? I'd like to be the one that says it's all in your head. I'd like to be the one to say it's nothing. And so I was like, sure, what's one more person looking at my vulva? Let's do it. And she didn't even, you know, have to take a very good look. Mm-hmm. Right away, she was like, oh, you have lichen sclerosis.
Wow.
And I was like, what? Like, right. I've never, like, in this time, like most of us, you hit Google, right? You start Googling your symptoms. And I never encountered lichen sclerosis. In my searches, I kept getting,
and
you know.
And you know why? Because we are reproductive age women, mm-hmm. and they all say itching. And if you don't have itching,
right.
if you don't have the white spots, if you don't have the white paper cigarette looking skin, it's not going to come up.
Yeah. And it's really interesting that you say that, because as we were walking from her office to the kind of space where she does her exams, she was like, you have itching, right? Because I didn't bring that up as a symptom.
Right.
And I was like, I mean, maybe, but for me, it was more discomfort. And so I was kind of like, I don't know. And again, she was like, itching, right? And I was like, sure. Like,
yeah, we'll go, if you we'll want it to that. Be
like, you seem to really think there's some itching going on. So we could say itching too. Sure, why not? Like, I got itching. But wait, like, and so looking back with the knowledge that I have now with what I've learned through your podcast, I'm just kind of like, you know, you so many puzzle pieces start working together, right? You're like,
all the time.
Oh, that's why she emphasized the itching, because even afterwards she told me this is primarily a postmenopausal disease, which I think we're kind of realizing now is due to just problematic literature.
Being undiagnosed for so long, and it's an issue. It's a systemic issue, and you know, hopefully with us talking about it, bringing awareness, it's something that we can help start alleviating. It's a long process, but you being here and the other ladies who sharing their stories, we're making the little bit of noise now so that it grows. Our voices grow louder and louder and louder. And
100%.
So we start getting some attention.
Yeah.
So, so let's continue on with your story. So now she tells you, you have lichen sclerosis. Does she explain what it is at the doctor's office, or does she give you minimal information and you go to Dr. Google?
The latter, definitely. She told me, she said, it's typically seen with postmenopausal women. Every now and then there's somebody your age with it, but it's pretty rare. It's considered autoimmune. There may be a genetic component. We treat with clobetasol or corticotopical steroids. She gave me a prescription. And the truth is, she may have given me direction on how to use it. And I think a lot of people might relate. When you hear that you have a disease that you've never heard of before, your mind, you just become dizzied. And you kind of stop hearing. You hear, but you're not hearing, right? And so I wonder, maybe she did give me directions, but I was so overwhelmed with what I was hearing, right? This crazy disease in my vulva, autoimmune, which can be really scary because, you know, my mother had an autoimmune condition. She had multiple sclerosis growing up. So I saw what she went through and I was like, Jesus, you know, your mind starts racing to these worst case scenarios. Oh, she did mention the little 1-5% cancer. So you hear the cancer word. You don't give a shit about how to apply your steroid. You hear cancer, you hear autoimmune, you hear this crazy disease, and you start thinking, can I ever have sex again?
Right.
So maybe she did give me a little bit more, but I didn't retain it.
Right.
So when I got home, I definitely did. Hey, sup, Google? Tell me about my vulva. What's going on? What do I got to do?
Wow.
And that was not very helpful.
I was going to say, what did that do to your mental? You're already in this state of shock. You're in the state of, what am I going to do now? You're anxious. because you don't know. You're having all of these thoughts. You're in the spiral. You're in that hurricane right in the middle of it. Like, where am I going to go from here? Mm-hmm. And I have to deal with this for the rest of my life. That was my thought when I got it. I have to deal with this for the rest of my life.
Right.
Are you kidding me? You're probably like, I went over a decade trying to find out what the fuck I have. And now you're telling me I can't even if I can get rid of it. So how was that Google search that day?
It was not very good for my mental health. I am already a person that struggles with panic attacks and anxiety. So you can already imagine the state I was in and how Google was unhelpful. At the time, 2 years ago, there really wasn't much out there. And what I could find in the medical forums was, it's autoimmune, treat with topical corticosteroids. And that's all I kept seeing. But I didn't see any information on how to use your steroids. And a lot of the questions I had weren't discussed. So questions I was interested in was, what kind of underwear do I wear? Can I wear underwear? Can I exercise? What does sex look like? How does that need to change? A lot of these lifestyle questions.
Right.
And instead, I'm getting cancer. And then I'm getting, because of course I Google searched images, because why not, right?
Don't do that. If you're newly diagnosed, don't do it. Don't do it to yourself. You know, if you want to know what you look like, pull out a mirror, but don't do it every day, once a month. But don't torture yourself. It's not good.
That is exactly what I did. And that is, you know, I looked at those images and it was horrifying. I pretty much thought, this is going to be me if this isn't already, because I didn't know what I looked like down there up at this point. So I thought, maybe this is me. Mm-hmm. And if this isn't me, this is going to be me.
Right.
With cancer and all the worst case scenarios that come with it. So it wasn't very helpful. Google also led me to some Facebook groups, which for me personally, I did join them initially because I was hoping for some information. But just like Google, I didn't find them very helpful. The quality of the information wasn't what I personally was looking for. And I either found just a lot of horror stories, which is fine and fair because people have every right to express themselves and where they are in their journey. And if that journey is they're in a hard place, then that's completely valid. But I was in that hard place and I couldn't stomach only seeing tragedy after tragedy unfold because it basically fed into this narrative of this is your future.
Right.
And, you know, it wasn't doing me any good. And I always think that if you're going to join something, do it because it enhances your mental health. If it takes away from it, step away. And so that's what I did. And so stepping away, I had no support group and Google wasn't helping me. And I was diagnosed by my general physician in Canada. You get a referral to a specialist, but my specialist had a 9-month waiting period.
Oh my goodness.
So I went 9 months not using my steroid properly because I didn't know. My tube said applied daily. But I'm an overthinker and, you know, your sunscreen also says applied daily. So does your chapstick. And I put my chapstick on more than one, you know, throughout the day. I'm applying my chapstick daily. So I started thinking, I think I put it on 3 times at one point a day because I was so desperate to get relief from the symptoms. And I didn't know. I was like, daily, like, when, how much, I don't know. So I finally went back to my GP and she gave me a little bit more direction the second time. But I still had to go 9 months. Not really knowing how to go on living my life. I basically didn't wear any of my old clothes. I stopped having sex. I actually didn't think we could have sex with lichen sclerosis because I wasn't seeing anything online saying if you could. And I actually thought I could not have sex. So I thought I had to stop altogether. I stopped exercising for a good 4 to 5 months because I also thought I couldn't do that. I basically stopped living for a really long time. And I would largely attribute that to just my not being able to find any information.
And it's sad because you're a bodybuilder, mm-hmm. you know, so exercising was part of your routine.
Yeah.
You know, you've pretty much, like you said, you stopped living.
I did.
And unfortunately, it's because you didn't have the information. And I say it all the time. You've heard me say it before, and I'm going to say it again. The fear, the anxiety comes from lack of information.
Oh, 100%.
Lack of education and lack of having a plan for the future.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, I had none of those, right?
Exactly.
I didn't even know how to use my steroids, so.
Yeah.
Not a very good plan.
No. And if you don't know how to use your steroid, please, please, please go listen to episode LS Basics and listen to the interview with Dr. Jill Kraft. Absolutely listen to those two episodes if you don't listen to anything else. So now you have a little bit of direction. Now, at this time, are you in a relationship?
Well, yeah, at this point, I was married. I was married when I was diagnosed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How long were you with your husband before you were married?
I think we were together about a year. We moved pretty quickly.
Okay. So in that year, you're having mm-hmm. sex. Are you telling him about the pain? How is it affecting your relationship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely told him about the pain. I'm not very good at faking it. So even if I didn't say anything, he could tell from my facial expressions, especially mm-hmm. like I said at the beginning, mm-hmm. when he's first entering me, like I kind of wince and, you know, tense up and almost in anticipation, right? Because I know historically this is going to hurt me. So not only is my body just kicking in subconsciously, but consciously, right. I'm also bracing consciously because I know what's coming and I know initially it's going to hurt. And again, when we were having sex regularly, I could kind of get to a point where it was just mildly uncomfortable.
Right.
But, you know, it started getting worse and worse. And I put a lot of pressure on myself.
How so?
I felt, and it's so contradictory to my feminist values, but I felt, and I wouldn't put this on any other person but myself, I felt like me as a wife, as a partner, I should be able to do this for him mm-hmm. and for us. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I felt like I need to just suck it up.
Suck
like
it
there's
up.
Nothing, there's nothing wrong with you. Just get through it. Like, you know, and so I'd initiate and I'd try and have sex as much as we could. But it was getting worse and worse. And at one point, I don't know, I think it just got so bad. Like I was walking around and it felt like there were paper cuts all over my vulva, like someone shattered glass and I was sitting on it. And this was after sex too. This wasn't just during. At this point, these symptoms were well beyond just pain with sex. They were lingering after. Yeah. And it was so bad. And I just remember thinking, I think we need to step back. I said to him, I think I need a break from trying to have sex. I don't know what's wrong. I can't figure it out. The doctors can't figure it out, but I know there's something wrong. And I really think that we just need to step back from this. And he was completely supportive of this, of course. And then shortly after I did get diagnosed, I think about 3 weeks after, because when it got this bad, that's when I went to the clinic downtown because I was like, something's
got to give.
I know they tell me there's nothing, but like there has to be. You don't walk around feeling like someone's thrown glass at your vulva and that can't be right.
And just like we had said earlier, as you're continuing to traumatize your vulva, you're tearing that scarring, it's refusing and mm-hmm. it's thickening now. You're getting more severe symptoms because now it's not just during sex. Now it's after sex. Now it's when you're not even having sex.
Mm-hmm.
And you're very lucky that this didn't develop into vaginismus because mm-hmm. with vaginismus, if subconsciously your body is saying, okay, we're not going to let anything enter us because it's painful. And the subconscious job is to keep you surviving. Pain equals death. into the brain. Mm-hmm. There's only two switches, life and death, mm-hmm. and pain equals death. And we got to prevent death. So if you're continuing to have painful sex, if the mind correlates sex with pain, eventually you could get to that point. So you're very lucky that you were mindful to that, even mm-hmm. though they were telling you different.
Right, yeah.
And that he was understanding.
Oh, absolutely.
He was a partner with you and not mm-hmm. just like, oh, that's your problem. You deal with it. And the fact that you felt comfortable enough to talk yeah. with him, because unfortunately, a lot of ladies don't feel that comfort. Their partner mm-hmm. isn't understanding. And it can lead to even more stress, which we yeah. know stress is the enemy of LS. Mm-hmm. And now you're even further down this road, which is going to lead you to even more pain, more symptoms. Yeah. And then the fact that you don't even know what you have. So right. you have no way to combat it. So mm-hmm. kudos to you. Kudos to you.
And to him. And yeah, to him. Because, you know, absolutely. He was like, I think you're making the right decision. This is 100% what I think we need to do right now. And I think he would have been happy if I said it way earlier too. I think, again, because that pressure I put on myself, I pushed through for maybe longer than I should have.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that pressure too. I didn't have pain with sex. I had a little bit of burning every once in a while, but mm-hmm. I never tore or right. had anything like that. But even when there was the burning and the discomfort, mentally I was just like, well, let's just try to find the pleasure in the pain. This is what being married is about. This is what being in a relationship is about. You got to have sex. And with age comes knowledge. And now I know, yes, yeah, sex is important, but intimacy is more important, and yeah. sex does not equal intimacy.
Exactly.
So even if, God forbid, my husband or I could never have penetrative sex again, we can still have intimacy. We can mm-hmm. do other things. So how long did you go without having sex?
Probably about a year and a half.
So during that year and a half, did you find ways to have the intimacy without the penetrative sex?
Well, yeah, we just used our sex swing.
You can't use the swing if you can't stick it in. I mean,
yes, you can for other things.
Okay, we're going to talk after the cameras go off.
But in all seriousness, yeah, absolutely. We never took intimacy off the table. We just took penetrative sex off the table. And so that's we just good. Found different ways. Again, like, it's funny the things that we know, but we put on ourselves that we don't put on others. So mm-hmm. I would be the first one to tell you penetrative sex is not sex, or it's one way to have sex.
Right.
But there are so many other ways to have sex, and there are so many other ways to be intimate. But again, in my head versus the rest of the world. But once I kind of came to that place, I was like, okay, so let's play around with what we do have on the table right now. So we did get to keep our intimacy. We just weren't able to have penetrative sex for a long time.
In case my listener can't have penetrative sex and they're having issues trying to keep that intimacy, mm-hmm. what are some of the things that you did with your husband that still kept that closeness, but took penetrative sex off the table?
Right. I think there's a spectrum mm-hmm. Of things. It can be just walking by the kitchen, seeing your husband and grabbing his butt, if that's, you know, something he's into mm-hmm. or something like that, or cuddling more, holding hands, touching each other more, just touching each other throughout the day. If he comes by and plays with your hair, you give him a little massage, something like that, right? Touching is really big. And then that can be expanded. Kiss each other. Maybe it's just kisses in the morning, whatever it is. Pretend like you're in high school and mm-hmm. make out again, like you were in high school. Like, you know, yes. pretend, get yourself in that mindset. Like, we're going to pretend like we're dating again for the first time and we're just making out. Yes. You know, there's that. And then you can incorporate different, you know, play and stuff with, you know, making out if you want. oral sex, depending on where you're at, could or could not be on the table. For us, that was, for at least me to him. For me, I didn't feel comfortable because there's too much going on down there. I wasn't okay with that, but I could give that to him. So that was, you know, something that we still had on the table. And then, you know, we did other things too, like couples meditation to try and get in tune with each other's bodies and breathing and all of that. And then also, like, ask yourself, what are you into, right? What things arouse you? What things are fun for you? And then try and incorporate those into it, right? I mean, you can play with the senses. You can play with temperatures. You can play with toys. There's tons of toys that you can incorporate. And they don't all have to involve genital play either. You know, there are toys that aren't explicitly a vibrator in a vagina or something like that. So you can play with toys. There's so many options out there, but I think really, you know, get creative with each other and then with yourself and get to know yourself and get to know your partner again. And you might find that there's a whole new array of things that you can bring into your sex life and your intimacy.
I completely agree. And if you need some more ideas or if you want to approach this with your partner and you're not sure how, I did an episode on how to still have a great relationship with LS, and it incorporates a lot of these ideas on continuing to have intimacy and different ways that you can explore that with your partner and what they can do to help you with LS and what you can do to help them, because LS doesn't just happen to us. It happens to our relationship, to our partners as well. And so just like they got to look out for us, we got to look out for them. So that's another good episode for you to listen to. So now you've gone to the GP. She's referred you to a specialist. You got to wait 9 months. You mentioned that you went and got a sex therapist. Mm-hmm. Was there anyone else that you sought care from?
Yeah, I did also get a pelvic floor physiotherapist around the same time that I got a sex therapist. This was a decision on my part. This wasn't recommended by my GP, but as I left my GP's office in the elevator, I told myself, I'm getting a pelvic floor physiotherapist and I'm getting a sex therapist to address the two components of what I have, so that I can address the physical and that I can address the mental, because I wanted to have sex. If I was asexual, then I would have just been like, we'll just deal with the symptoms, but I'm not. And I wanted to have sex with my husband. So I was like, I'm not losing my sex life. I'm going to do whatever it takes and however long it takes to get that back. So I also got help with a physical therapist.
How did talking to the sex therapist help you in the beginning?
The sex therapist helped me in the beginning to overcome a lot of anxious thoughts and intrusive thoughts and behaviors that were damaging my mental health. And so one behavior that I'll just touch on really quickly, and I write a blog post about it, is checking your vulva. Mm. So I actually started compulsively checking shortly after my diagnosis. Now, when I say compulsively checking my vulva, I would look at my vulva a minimum of 30 times a day, a minimum. It was obsessive. I couldn't work. If I was having a conversation with someone, I was really just half there because I was just thinking, what does your vulva look like now? I got to go check. Oh, wow. And it was so powerful and so strong. And I had never experienced compulsive impulses like that before. That was very new to me. I'm not new to anxiety, but compulsive behaviors like that, that kind of came from my lichen sclerosis, I was very new to that. So she really helped me overcome that, which was tremendous because that really got me ahead. She also helped me with some dysmorphia issues because I had a lot of shame and I felt very disgusted in myself. Well, I was disgusted in my vulva, and then that extended to my whole self because my vulva was disgusting. I was disgusting. It was ugly. I couldn't stop comparing my vulva to other vulvas that I would see on the internet. You know, I just wanted their labia minora. so bad.
So we didn't touch on that. What did you see? What did your vulva look like that made you feel that way?
By the time I looked, and I only looked after my diagnosis, my skin, I guess the labia minora and the clitoral hood and that for my body would be pink, but it was, I didn't have white patches, but it was discolored. It was almost off white. It almost like wasn't pink anymore. And then I noticed that I don't even know what my labia minora really looked like, but it was completely fused on both sides to the labia majora. I lost about 3/4 of it shortly after, completely reabsorbed because I wasn't using my steroids properly and I was only putting it where I was feeling symptoms, which wasn't on the labia minora. So shortly after, that disappeared and my clitoral hood had basically fused over my clitoris. So that's what I was seeing, was a very shocking lack of anatomy and a loss of color. So it hit me really hard.
I can imagine, and I know from experience. So she helped you with that. That's amazing. That's awesome. Yeah. I always advocate for us to get therapy, counseling, as soon as we're diagnosed, because not only did you have to deal with now these anatomy changes, you got to deal with the knowledge that you have a disease that is chronic, that is non-curable, and it's life-changing.
Yeah.
And it's like life-changing in the snap of a second. These doctors, they give us these diagnoses and send us on our way like, yeah, you're good. Bye.
You know, basically.
Not thinking about the fact that mentally we're not good.
I say that's the worst part of it for me, is actually the mental side of things, not the physical. As annoying and terrible and painful as the physical was for me, it was definitely more the mental aspect that I had trouble with LS. And I think the other piece that my sex therapist helped me out with was acceptance and surrendering to the process, because with anxiety comes the need to control. And I put so much energy trying to control and be the best that I could so that this would resolve, or at least, you know, and it was only when I kind of let go of trying to make everything perfect and, you know, having so much control over every aspect of it, that things really started to settle for me.
How was the pelvic floor physical therapy part of it?
Yeah, that was really awesome. I had a really good experience. I did 6 sessions with my first physical therapist. The initial visit, you know, she takes your history and then asks what you're there for, what your goals are. For me, what I wanted to get out of physical therapy was non-painful penetrative sex. And at this point, I had stopped, and I know that I kind of tend to close up, and like my vagina almost narrows when I'm not having sex frequently. So I didn't want it to like narrow too much. So that was the concern that I addressed with her. And one of the most amazing things that she said to me before the physical exam, and this was life-changing for me, she said, "Do you have a history of trauma?" And not a single medical practitioner had ever asked me that. Every time I was in the gynecologist office, they just go right in with their speculum. Never had anyone asked if there was a history of trauma. So of course I said yes, because there was when I was a teenager, and this led her to change how she conducts the clinical examination. So she was very gentle, very slow, very compassionate, very soothing. And she explained every part of what she was doing, what she was going to do next, so that there wasn't, you know, if she was going to go from the 6 o'clock to the 4 o'clock, I wouldn't get taken off guard by the sudden move. She would tell me, "I'm going to move up here now." And she would tell me why. And so she put me at such ease that actually the finger that she was using didn't hurt. And this was a big shock to me, because before, a finger would have really hurt me.
Right.
So that kind of showed me that if you can be in a calming space, if you can let your nervous system settle, then, you know, you can create some opening down there. And so that was really helpful for me, just mentally, to get a bit of confidence to kind of move on to working with dilators, which is what we did next. So I did work with the dilators with her. So she would show me how to use it. We would do it in the office and she would show me, you know, how to massage inside and all of this. And then I would do that at home for a week or two. And then I would go back and see her. At that point, we would like level up and go to the next dilator. I managed to get almost all the way to the biggest dilator. And she said, okay, things are going well. Like you can pretty much go on your own. And when you're ready for sex, you can go for it. I didn't go for it. And I stopped the dilators. And why I stopped was because I started experiencing burning again. Mm-hmm. And some more of the symptoms. So I was less inclined to put something in there when I wasn't feeling very comfortable. And I also didn't know, like, am I going to cause more tearing by going in there? Mm-hmm. I didn't know these things. And neither did she. So she was very transparent from the beginning that I was her first patient with lichen sclerosis.
Okay.
And that's not her area. But again, I feel more confident with a practitioner that puts their ego at the door and tells right. me where they are at. I feel more confident than that, than somebody that's just like, yeah, no worries. I got this. Like,
right.
I'm an expert, even though I have no paper or credentials on this. So I pretty much gave up the dilators. And in retrospect, I think if I did things differently, I would have waited to start physical therapy, or at least to start with the dilators. I think in retrospect, I needed the time for my body to first heal. I needed the steroids to work their magic. I needed the fissures to heal. I needed, you know, things to calm down there first. Okay. And really not necessarily get into remission, but I think at least get things to calm down, because things were so active and I was probably only 3 weeks into my steroid treatment and I wasn't even using them properly. Right. So I think in retrospect, what I would have done was seek out proper education on how to use my steroids. So find your podcast, learn about steroid use that for a few months and just let that be my first focus. Right. And then once things settle, then move on to working with dilators. Now, she did give some amazing advice on how to de-stress and calm the body. And that was incredibly helpful and useful. And so for a listener that might be considering pelvic physiotherapy, I'm not discouraging you. I think you should go right away. But if you're in pain still down there, you have active cuts, fissures, et cetera, wait for the dilators, let the steroids, let your body kind of calm down. But there are other tools that they can teach you in the meantime to relax the pelvic floor muscles that will be extremely beneficial for you.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Listen, if you want to get the whole nitty gritty, the deep down on Jacqueline's story, you've got to go to lssupport.net/join TLLC. Okay. And I'm going to tell you exactly what that is right now. Jacqueline is freaking amazing. And she is starting a blog on her journey. So this is just like an overview of what she went through in these last 3 years. Well, more than 3 years, if you really start from the very beginning, over this last decade and a half. And she is going into depth with you. She is going to give you the raw emotions, the raw thoughts, the mental, and she's going to tell you what she did to come out of that. So this is a story of hope. This is going to give you the knowledge that you need to get to where she is. This is her roadmap for you for that marathon. Because, yeah, you got to take your steps to get to there. But she's telling you, look, this is the road I took. So you don't have to go down these alleyways and down these, you know, dead end streets. This is the map. She's giving you the map. So go to lssupport.net/join TLLC. So you can join. And this is the title. I love this fucking title. The Lost Labia Chronicles. Okay. How fucking amazing is that title? The Lost Labia Chronicles. Because why? Because she done lost her labia.
Yeah.
Okay.
She gone.
She gone. So we gonna tell you how we got there and how we're okay with this now. Okay. Yep. It's going public on March 2nd. This episode is going out the Friday before. If you want a sneak peek to that first blog post, go join now and you get the first blog post before the public. And come March 2nd, you get a little special something, something. So sign up now at lssupport.net/join TLLC. I'll have it in the show notes. So if you drive in or something, don't worry, it's there. And if you want to get in contact with Jacqueline, DM her, let her know how fabulous she is, ask her questions. She's on Instagram and on Facebook at The Lost Labia Chronicles. So hit her up, follow her, IG, Facebook at The Lost Labia Chronicles. I love it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm so thankful for Jacqueline coming to tell you her story, to share her journey, because I truly believe it is going to help so many of you. It can get better. Please don't give up. You can do this. You can beat this. I know you can. And that's why Jacqueline's story is so important, because she is living proof that with the correct team, with the support, doing the right things, you can do this. You absolutely can do this. So make sure that you listen to the next episode, because Jacqueline's going to lay it all out. Everything that she's done to get to a place from where she started, over a decade of painful sex, and then to find out that you have this incurable disease that could potentially do damage to your marriage, to a place where now she has amazing sex multiple times a week with no pain. She's got a support system that has elevated her mental health. She's got a team of doctors that are there for her for whatever she needs, that's continuing to help her grow. And she's giving back to the community. How beautiful. If you haven't yet, go to lssupport.net/join TLLC. Sign up so you get notified every time a new blog post come out, because you are not going to want to miss it. She gives you all. She has no filter. So she's going to tell you everything. The good, the bad, the ugly, the uplifting, how to do it, how she did it, because you can do it too. Your journey may not be exactly the same as Jacqueline's, but I guarantee you, you're going to travel down some of those same roads, and maybe you have to go right when she went left, but at least you'll know what to look for. I want you to email me or DM me and let me know what resonated for you so far. Did it touch you? Did you say, yeah, that's me? If any part of Jacqueline's story rang true for you, email me, DM me, let me know. I want to hear from you. Jacqueline wants to hear from you. I will let her know, and she can email you back too. Email me at Kathy with a K at lichensclerosispodcast.com or DM me on Instagram at lichensclerosispodcast. I'm looking for your emails. I'm excited to tell you that one of the projects coming from the Lichen Sclerosis Support Networks is the Lost Labia Chronicles. Yes, Jacqueline's blog is part of the Lichen Sclerosis Support Network, because they are bringing you all of these stories, all of this content, so that you know you're not alone. There is a place for you to get information. There is a place for you to get educated. There is a place for you to get that support that you need to help you start building that team. Make sure you're following them on Instagram, on Facebook. If you're driving and you can't write right now, it will be in the show notes. No worries. Go to lichensclerosispodcast.com/survivingalone and you will find all the information and everything that was referenced in this episode. So be sure to go to lichensclerosispodcast.com/survivingalone and you'll get all of our social media. Make sure you follow us all so that way you could stay up to date on all the lichen sclerosis news that's coming out, because we're just getting rolling and you do not want to miss this train, okay? I hope you have an amazing week and you make sure you come back next Friday so you can hear the rest of Jacqueline's story. And I will talk to you next time.